Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Punaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvina Vadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Questions. Okay. I have to end a little early tonight. It's last meeting of the school. Okay. When I'm in physical pain, I can differentiate. When I am in physical pain, I can differentiate myself from it. What I realize is that I feel the pain move when I focus on it, and when I focus on my being, I can feel pain less, but it's still there. But this is to a certain extent, and if the pain becomes severe, it doesn't help to differentiate myself from pain. I think my biggest fear is to have constant pain that doesn't go away, and I can't distract myself from it. Then how can there be freedom from pain, really? Yes, Atma is free from pain, but the body is still there in pain. Yeah, that's true. As long as you...
We had it before.
Huh?
We had that question before.
When? Long time ago?
Yeah, at least 1 week ago.
I don't remember.
That's a long time ago.
I probably... That's funny, I have no recollection of it.
Does someone know which are the new ones? Are there some more old ones?
Yeah. These all old.
It looked like the same ones. I recognize them.
This is about the Panchadashi, and I talked about Paramartananda. This is the one about guilt.
I know this one is new. I think Beppa just put this one.
I have full control.
Discreetness.
Oh, that's a good one.
Is this the good one?
Yeah.
Okay. This is the one. This is the one we'll do. We grew up in generations where parents could be too strict, hard, unable to show us their love. But they would set boundaries, push us to overcome obstacles and to rebel as well, to find our way. Can you unfold the consequences of growing up with parents, friends, who try to please you and do not put you in a situation to face life and its difficulties? What advantages and flaws to have parents who behave like friends more than guides. Well, I think it's really disconcerting for a child, young person, to not have a parent who acts like a parent. I think it's really confusing for a child, and they don't have any boundaries. You get your the whole structure of your psyche, really, the structure, you know, and the boundaries are given to you by your parents and the family, provide that. And say the family doesn't provide anything. It's kind of like a free-for-all. The children, they get very insecure because nothing's holding them, you know. And so they lose their... They lose a certain sense of strength and stability. I think I've told the story before when I was babysitting my sister's children were young, maybe really young, like three kids. And they went out and I stayed home to take care of the kids. And I stayed at their house for a week or so. And so I was just being an aunt, a totally undisciplined aunt, no boundaries, nothing. They were jumping up and down and doing this. And then I going just carrying on and having a good time, but doing basically whatever they wanted, and I was just going along with it and playing with them. They weren't doing anything wrong, but there are also no boundaries were being set. And I started realizing that they were getting worried and insecure. And then I kind of understood the whole thing that they actually need, like they need a bedtime. And they need to know, they need a container so that they can be free within that container. And if they don't have that container, like there's no walls or nothing to push up against, then they don't know what to do and where to stop. And so I think it'd be really, really very disconcerting. I think I don't go along so much with parents who are very, I don't know, very, very strict without love, you know. Like, I think there should be a deep caring and a deep relationship, and strictness and boundaries. And I think everybody does it wrong. You know, nobody has the perfect solution, you know, to do everything perfectly. But, you know, if you're kind and loving and firm, this got some combination of that, then I think everything works out well in the end. But that firmness, that certain amount of strictness is really important, I think. And that's my experience, and that's in the psychology books, that's what they say. I think a lot of young people are kind of lost because there's a lot of laziness also on the part, if that's kind of a derogatory word, I guess, but let me just say it, not meaning it in any other, just what it is. You know, like letting the kids just watch TV so that you can be free to do your own thing. You know, or letting the kids come not have a curfew because then you have to punish them if they don't get home on time. Or, like I said, my uncle always would, I mean, my brother-in-law would always stay up sometimes at 2 or 3 in the morning when his children didn't come home on time. He would just sit in his chair and wait. And then they would have a discussion about it. You know, that's hard to do. It's hard to say no, you know. It takes a lot of strength and a lot of love to say no in the best interest of your children. It's easier to just let them do what they want and let them run free, you know, just be their friend, you know. But then they don't get the structure that they need. They don't have any inner strength or boundaries. I just don't think it works, and I don't think that kids like it either. I don't think they want their parents to be their hangout buddies, you know. I think it's really weird, and I think children think it's really odd also. So I think they depend on us to give them guidance and not go along with their teenage whims, you know, that maybe are really, really not at all in their best interests. But it's much easier to let them do it than not. It takes a lot of strength, a lot of misery. And this only because they want to do things so badly, you know. I used to plot and scheme with my parents, like, I'd set these things up, you know, like how this wonderful thing was happening, and I just couldn't wait. I couldn't wait for it, and I'd be so excited. It was all just a phony thing. I couldn't wait, you know, for this to happen, and I really can't wait to go, and I'd be going on and on, and then I'd say, can I go, you know? After I've set them up to make them feel as bad as they could possibly feel, to say no, you know? And my father would just say, you're not doing that. But you know what? I have complaints about him, a lot of complaints about him. But that's not one of them, you know, that he didn't kind of fall prey to my playing him, you know, trying to get. Of course, he always said no, right? That's a problem. He always said no. But on the other hand, he was very strict and he cared, you know. I don't know quite how to say what I'm talking, but I think you understand. Those are my words of wisdom. I don't think being this good. You can be a friend as long as you're still a parent. Does that make sense? But I see parents giving up their parenting role, and I don't think that's very a happy thing, in my experience anyway.
Do you feel like would a teenager be open to discussing? Like I'm setting some boundaries for you. You'll thank me later, or is this something that I missed that is feeling really important that we do, or some way of presenting?
Yeah,
or is that?
I think that's nice, where you actually can talk things over.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as you're willing to set the boundaries,
yeah,
and that it's in their best interests, you know. And you're kind of often the one, even though you have a deep discussion about it, it doesn't, and maybe they'll even be right. Maybe they'll make you see, okay, you know, you'd be flexible to change your mind sometimes. But it has to be in their best interests, not in yours. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Then I think all those discussions are valuable. But there's different ways. You know, I have one brother who... He was kind of like, he was a very loving father. But if his son, when his son was in high school, and Bobby, he'd want to get in all kinds of trouble, you know, just because he was a teenager. And he would get caught doing something, or he'd ask my brother, and my brother would say, "You're not doing that." And he'd say, "Why? Because I said so. That's why." But he was a really good father. And then later when his boy was older, like in his 20s, I remember he said to him, you know, he said, "Did I cause too much damage?" "Was I good enough father? Did I cause too much damage?" And the boy goes, "No, Dad, I really needed all that." You know, he needed that kind of, you know, strength.
So Radha, how does that work for the adults who had parents who wanted to be more friends than parents, like as they grew up?
I don't know, I just think it's emotionally a problem.
Oh.
It doesn't work very well. You don't have parents inside.
Mm.
You know, interjected parents that then become a structure, an inner structure for you. So it's, you become like the parent, but then that's kind of a lonely place to be, like the parentified child, and then the parents are the children. That's
mm-hmm.
not a very nice situation. Does it feel good?
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't consider myself an expert in these things, but you know, I'm just telling you my experiences with it. I see it at school also with the kids that come up, you know, they're 18, 19, in their 20s. And some kids are very they're very kind of disciplined and they can accomplish a lot. And others don't, they're not like that. They don't have that kind of structure to be able to to complete something. Like even with things that are hard, like it's hard to write a 15-page paper, you know, and have it be done well, and have it be edited 2 or 3 times so that it's well written and well crafted. Some kids do that just amazingly well, and others just kind of can't. And they'll just write something down, you know, like blah, blah, blah. And that's because they don't have that kind of discipline, you know. Like when you were a child and you come home and you have to do your homework, and the parents will watch you do your homework and make sure and help get the homework done. It has to be correct. They'll type your paper. Well, not for us anymore. We have computers. But my mother used to type all my papers. I'd write the paper, and then she'd type it out for me using these ditto sheets. They're like carbon copies. So I could hand in a typed paper. And that's all time-consuming stuff. But then if you have parents that make sure that you do these things, you know, and that you can't just slough it off, that creates a certain attitudes. Mm-hmm. That I think are really, really helpful for when you get older. As long as they love you, you know. Even if they have a lot of troubles, and you know, most of our parents have different degrees of problems, just because they're people. But if they love you and they care about you, and they set boundaries, then I think it all works out well, even though they have problems like everybody else.
Bebe? Yes. Like, I guess many parents behave like friends. They want to give this closeness in the relationship that they didn't receive from their parents. But apparently what happens in many cases is that they exchange the friendship for the emotional validation, because what they really wanted as children is just somebody that a parent that they could be seen and understood, like Phil, you know, with the episode of Manda, that could tell them how they feel and they could feel understood. Now the thing is that nobody taught us how to validate people and our children's emotions. And Phil, for example, he knows because he learned about it. So as a parent, how do you learn to help your children distinguish that you're trying to correct the behavior, but you're not trying to invalidate the person? It's just you refer to that behavior, but you don't know how to explain it, and you don't know how to show that you see their feelings and that you're able to give their legitimation.
Well, I think every generation is much more psychologically mature or psychologically developed than the previous generation, because psychology is relatively new, actually. Or it can go back, you know, 3,000-4,000 years in a different form. But the psychology that we have today just keeps being something that becomes more and more natural to us, you know. Even how to be with our own feelings, how to talk about our own feelings. You know, 20, 40 years ago, people didn't have a clue how to talk about their own feelings or even to be with their own feelings. So we, many, many Westerners anyway, do know how to be with their own feelings and talk about them. And so then, if they know how to do it with themselves, they can do it with their children. You know, because you have, that's part of who you are. Your psychological skills are part of who you are. And so I think, like what Sky was saying, you know, if you may be very, very strict, but you can have a discussion about it, and you can say, why? Sometimes the kids don't care at all about your discussion. But I think it's still a nice, I've had that experience. And they just want to do what they want to do, and they want you just to say yes and leave them alone. You know? But I think it's still a good idea to have the discussion, you know. I think it's a nice thing to do. But also, like, it's very easy to name a feeling when you see a feeling, like to say, you know, I know you're really angry. You just labeled a feeling. I know you're really upset about this. I know you're really angry, and I know you really want to do it. You know, I see that, and I understand it also. But I am saying no because it's not in your best interest, and it's in your parent, and that's the decision. But I understand, because I'd probably want to do it too when I was your age. But no, you cannot do that. However you say that, depends on your personality. You know? But you're acknowledging that they're upset, why they're upset, why they're angry. You know, you see it. You don't have to try to pretend like it's not there or that it's not valid. They're angry because they don't get to do something they really want to do. You know? It's not trying to be hard. It's just sometimes no is no. And it's not, they don't have to agree. You know? What if they have to agree with every decision? You know? It's not, I don't see it as a democracy. I think they need structure. And kids in the teenage years, sometimes they're kind of lucky to survive. It's such a wild ride. And there's so much going on out there. You know, there's so many drugs, there's so much sex, there's so much internet with everything imaginable on it. It's like it's just a wild out there. And so say they don't have inner strength to make decisions or to be able to have good friends and say no to those friends. They have to have inner strength. If they don't, then they just get sucked in to the currents. So that's you know, I think it's a real challenge and beautiful also to raise a child. But it requires a lot of commitment to help them get the structure they need and to feel really understood and respected. That's another big one, that you love your children, and this is from Swamiji, you love them, you like them, this is also for your partner, you love them, you like them, and you respect them. Because if anything of those is missing, then they don't develop well. And in a relationship, if you're married to somebody, you know, I love you, but, you know, I don't like you, and I certainly don't respect you. That's not a very happy situation. You need to, but say, I love you and I like you, but I don't respect you. That's no good. Okay. So, I love you and I respect you, but I don't like you. No. That won't work either. I love you, I like you, you're my best friend of relationships, and I really respect you. And that's not about the words, it's about the reality of it. You know? Then that's a really beautiful relationship. And then with your child, if you think in the same way, it's different than a relationship, but that love is there, and you like your child, and you respect your child, and you're their parent. I think that is wonderful. Then they can really grow and have self-esteem, you know. It's nice to imagine it like that.
About bringing in the spiritual aspects, it's too much to kind of just pull them in. Do we let them choose, or do bring them into it, how to bring them in gracefully, let's say?
Well, I think in, like for us in the Sangha, you already are spiritual. So everything that you do is spiritual in a sense, because of the Ishwararpana Buddhi. You know, so that everything that you are is going to be that. Every puja that you do, every time you talk about Ishwara, you know, without laying some sort of a belief system on them that they have to, like, what are they talking about? You already are an expression of that. And so I think lots of opportunities come up, lots of opportunities in the form of stories or in the form of nature, you know, or, you know, sometimes, you know, like in India, they have all of these comic books of all the devatas and things. The kids love those comic books because all of the stories, all of the myths are there, you know. So you can share those. It might be too Indian. It might be too Indian for you. But the stories are so good. That's what they do. In India, I think we can learn a lot from that, because the grandmas will always tell their grandchildren. That's what they'll do, is tell them all the stories, like all wonderful stories from the Ramayana and the Mahabharata and the Panchatantra. And there's many books of stories that they all have it by heart, you know. And so they'll just tell the kids stories, and all the stories have lessons in them, and they're very exciting. There's heroes and heroines, you know. But all of those stories pass on values of how to be. Yeah. I think stories are amazing. And you can have even, stories can have a different, you know, devatas. They're like, it's the same as having like Superman or Wonder Woman or something. But you have a devata. It's a little richer, you know. So that's something. If you do puja, then they'll probably want to learn the puja. How to do that, how to do those chants, and how to offer all these things. It's really pretty and beautiful. Yeah. If you have a puja table, then they can make their own puja table. I think it's going to be really fun and creative. You know, you'll figure out the things that would be really fun and moving for your child. You see what I mean? Mm. I would remember about stories, though, because that's so much how in ancient traditions so much is passed, all values and religion and everything is passed through stories. Even in Christianity, there are all the Bible stories. But that my parents used to read me all those Bible stories. Because there's something, there's feelings, there's everything involved. It's all three-dimensional. Of course, if you like Swamiji, you could make up hundreds of stories. He's such a good storyteller. Yeah. There's certain things, like certain dharmas also, that they're just taught, like you, when you teach your children certain values. You know, those are they're dharma. They're the proper behavior, like never lie, always tell the truth. You know, but when you tell the truth, what you say should be, you know, something not hurtful, something that's useful. You know, but don't lie, but make sure that what you say is beneficial and not hurtful to anybody, but always tell the truth. You can tell stories about some of these values, you know, like in Value of Values, you can assimilate those values and then make stories up so that they really understand, because that dharma gives them strength and shanti. I think it'll all come really naturally, because it's your whole life, you know. It'll be fun. I think all of our little babies are very lucky. I think the world is lucky to have them, honestly. Yeah. don't know if I said this one or not. Can you say that Ishvara's forms are all just different expressions of Brahman? Yeah. The whole universe is an infinite expression of Brahman. The whole universe. We call it Ishvara because once you bring Maya in, Brahman with the Maya that it allows for the expression, you know, is what we call Ishvara. And so there is nothing that's not an expression of Ishvara. In the Ishvara Srishti, then everything, all of the kind of the darkness and everything, the Adharma is really an expression of Jiva Srishti, which is still part of Ishvara Srishti. So we look at more the devatas are all an expression of Ishvara on a very kind of a very high level, kind of like the organs of, like Ishvara's hands and Ishvara's feet, like that. Ishvara's eyes, like the sun, that type of thing. You know, the devatas are, have special, they're all just kind of anthropomorphisms of a, kind of an infinite order. We just like Vayu is the wind. So you look at Vayu as part of part of Ishvara, that part that's responsible for the wind. And so that becomes a devata. Agni is a devata, fire. The devata, the order that contains all the capacities of fire. That would all belong to Agni. So we Agni is viewed as a devata. Varuna is water. So that those are just expressions of the devatas for all of the elements. But then there's an infinite order. So if you are praying for something, you know, we also often pray to Ganesha to remove obstacles, or Dakshinamurti to give us teaching, or Jnaneshwari, you know, to give us knowledge, or Saraswati to help us play musical instruments, and for all different kinds of blessings. Because of the order that they're, the aspect of Ishvara that they represent.
Is Trump like an amoeba or a bacteria in the body of Ishvara or something?
What is?
Trump.
He's the dark side. He's like the, you know, in all of the stories, Ramayana, Mahabharata, all the different types of epics, it is always a war between the devas and the asuras. Asuras means rakshasas and asuras. So the devas are predominantly sattva. And so they're more of just a representation of the sattva that reflects, Brahman reflects the self so well. So there's a manifestation of dharma. Where the asuras are predominantly tamas. And the rakshasas are predominantly rajas with tamas underlying. And so you get this display of different types of beings, some with the, when they're predominantly rajas and tamas with not sattva, then they tend to be more demonic. And so in order to place somebody like Trump, who's kind of a caricature in his expression, I keep recommending that you all read the chapter 16 and 17 of the Gita that goes through all of the different, especially mental, emotional qualities of people who are asuras. Because you see that it's timeless. It's not like here we are and look at what's happened to us. Instead you see cyclically, you know, this happens over and over and over again. And these wars, conflicts between the devas and the asuras, you know, are happening internally. Every time you choose dharma over adharma or adharma over dharma, that's like a war between the devas and the asuras. And then you can see it outward in a mythological form, all of these plays. But that's how it is. You know, in terms of people's lives and the trouble that we get ourselves into and out of. That's why these stories are so good. You know, they have such vivid characters, and they're so exciting and interesting, and there's something to learn, you know. So. And another interesting thing, this is just a little aside, we think Trump is Trump, and we can't in our lifetime really remember anything like this, but if you read back into the 1910, 1920s, 1929, what the people were into, the amount of white supremacy that was very active, they were trying to take over the Congress, they almost managed it, there was so much corruption, you know, and this racial hatred and total greed, just out of control greed, which is playing out now. But it's not that different than 100 years ago. It's a cycle. And at least that cycle, as horrible as it was, like in the 1920, 10, 20, 30, it did get what Jung will call this enantiodromia. What that is, it's the cycle that's like, you look at it like a pendulum. So say you have this pendulum, you know, the pendulum ball, and you hold it up and then you drop it, and then it swings, but it only goes so far. And then it hits this point, this enantiodromia, and comes back down. Then it goes here. But it can only go so far. And then it comes back. And so the swings, the cycles that we go through are kind of like that. It'll hit its peak and it just can't go any farther. And then it drops back and it changes. So that's one interesting way to look at it, because when you look at like in the 20s and we got a lot out of that, Franklin Roosevelt came, we got the New Deal, and the people, there was more equality, and a lot of things happened. I'm talking about the States. You probably have your own stories for your own country. But it's really interesting. But then, of course, when we bring in Kali Yuga, which we're supposedly in now, first quarter of Kali Yuga, that also has a, not a silver lining exactly, but it doesn't go straight down, you know? It's not going into dark like that. Instead, it goes like this. So things get better, even though you are going down into the dark, you're still coming up, you know? So things get better even though as they get darker and darker. Kind of interesting. So there's hope, keeps hope going. In terms of this a dharma. The overwhelming a dharma. But then there's also everything keeps it in balance. So we have somebody in our government now that's very, very dark. But then we have little Bhumi and Nuri. Yeah. We have some of our children and some really wonderful, wonderful people. You know. So good things are happening also. Just, you know, it's a way to appreciate Ishvara. That's my favorite thing, is to just always do your best and appreciate, be kind of wonderstruck at how Ishvara handles all these situations. And sometimes we call Krishna Janardana. Janardana, as a name for Krishna or for the Lord, is the one who punishes the poppies. And it's not that Bhagavan has a stick out to punish the poppies, you know. But a dharma, the universe is self-correcting, you know. If somebody is doing a dharma, they'll reap the results of that. If a country is doing a dharma, they'll reap the results. It all balances out. What's hard for us as humans is that Bhagavan's time runs so slowly that you don't get to appreciate the balancing process. You know, but say if you keep that in mind, then you can look at the movements in the creation a little differently. And know that our life is too short sometimes to really appreciate a full cycle. But I think that's helpful in terms of having hope and having it, you know, worth it to keep living and to have children and have a life. I think it's a good thing. I mean, for those who want children. But sometimes people think, who would want to ever bring children into this world as it is now? You know, the climate change and all of that. That's at one position. But another position is, you know, children are coming into this world. And and they may have something really important to do here to get us out of this mess. No, really. Because say if you're kind of on the side of Dharma or a good person who cares about others and cares about the world and your children do also, then those people matter in forming this balance. They have a job to do. It's their karma. So they're coming here, they're beautiful people, they're coming here to do their job, and it's not going to be an easy job, but it's their job. And that's why they're being born now. So I don't see it as, if it wasn't their karma to be born now, they wouldn't be born now. And if they're born of good parents, then they're a blessing for us and for the world in a really difficult time. Otherwise, you can take this stance of, I don't personally feel that way, but I have good friends and colleagues at school that really do, that we shouldn't bring anybody into the world because it's too dark and with the climate change, and I don't really feel that way. I feel if they're not meant to be here, they won't come. And that they're needed. And they have a hard job. In fact, some of us may be reborn right into the middle of it too. And that'll be our karma. We were born here to face Trump. And climate change, we're in a hard time too. Yeah. But I don't wish I wasn't here. Oh no, I'm meeting. Am I going to miss a song? We're going to have one song. I'll just be a little late. Is that okay?
Yeah. Thank you.
Maybe we can do swasti for me, and then you can all stay and do some bhajans.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I have to go to listen. Okay.
Swasti prajapya paripalayantam nyayena margena mahimahishah gobrahmanebhya shivamastu nityam loka samasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshatu parjanyah prithivi sasya shalini desho yam shobharahitah brahmanasantu nirbhayah om sarvesham swastir bhavatu sarvesham shantir bhavatu sarvesham purnam bhavatu sarvesham mangalam bhavatu sarve bhavantu sukhinah sarve santu niramayah sarve bhadrani pashyantu ma kaschit dukha bhag bhavet asato ma sadgamaya tamaso ma jyotir gamaya mrityor ma amritam gamaya om purnamadah purnamidam purnat purnamudachyate purnasya purnamadaya purnameva vashishyate om shanti shanti shantihi hari om shri gurupyo namaha hari om